Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 381.
Our end of year extravaganza.
Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
This is probably our most unplanned podcast ever.
As you can, you know, we're off to a great start also.
Exactly. We decided, instead of doing our usual very highly structured podcast where we take extensive notes on every story that we're going to talk about so that we don't forget people's names and things like that, we were just going to wing it and talk about whatever stories we felt like talking about to celebrate the end of the year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We're calling this an end of the year extravaganza. And it's an extravaganza because it's the end of the year and it's a podcast.
That's right. There's nothing unusually right, extravagant about it.
Right. But if you're looking for some sort of like, you know, top 20 countdown of the year's wildest political moments, then
didn't do that prep.
Look elsewhere because that's not what we're doing.
No, we're going to bring the stories that we remember to bring to you right now in the format we normally bring them, but maybe with fewer details. It's hard to know. Maybe as many. Maybe it turns out we don't need to prep at all for the podcast and we've been doing all this work for nothing. Who knows?
I fear that's not the case.
Our first story is just mostly about how COVID is just everywhere and you shouldn't breathe the air or eat any food or touch anything or do anything that you would ever want to do because you're going to get COVID doing it. Because
that's right. As I cough.
There's just only COVID everywhere.
Oh, man. I know. LA, like 30,000 cases in the last 2 days.
I mean,
which
that's too many.
Is crazy because you texted me that the other day in a panic that you and your mom were panicked about. And right. My first thought was like, well, yeah, that's what 15,000 plus 15,000 is because we've been at 15,000 for like the last 3 weeks. Like,
well, what's so funny about that, too, is that Brent texts me the number every day. So I did know the number also. But for some reason, 30,000 in 2 days just sounded like crazy.
No,
like,
it does.
Like 15,000 a day sounded bad.
Wait till you hear about 45,000 cases in 3 days.
Yeah, no, that's going to be nuts.
It's going to really blow your mind.
I had neglected to do the math to add together all those 15,000 a day cases.
No, but it does sound bad when you say them in a larger lump.
Yeah, no, it's imagine what the weekly total is going to be at that rate. I can't because I can't do that multiplication.
No, you're not going to do that.
I'm not trying to get involved in that, but it's more than 80,000 cases.
Yes.
In any case, it seems like California, well, I've heard this, I've talked about this with Brent, but also I've talked about this with other people in California. It feels like everyone is talking about how California must have that really contagious strain that Britain has that almost caused everyone in the EU to close their borders to them because they almost came into a real crisis because they announced that they had found this strain of coronavirus that was much more contagious, or at least they suspected it was more contagious. And then the whole EU just like shut down their borders, which meant that no one could get food through the channel, which meant that everyone was going to starve to death in Britain until somebody finally intervened and was like, you guys, what if we figured out a better strategy than just not sending them any food? But the EU is probably like, what do we care? They wanted to leave.
Right, because they also just got Brexit finished in some
They just Brexited. So France is probably like, we don't care what happens to you, but they also are the purveyors of all the food because the channel goes to them. So it was going to be rough times over in the UK.
Yeah. I think the county specifically, and that's where we're getting all these numbers. Those numbers that we just gave you are LA County numbers.
Right.
They're investigating whether that is actually the case, and it would not shock me because it's not as if, you know, I mean, the whole state is closed. That's not to say that people aren't ignoring rules and still gathering and doing things.
But they're doing that everywhere. It's not just California where people are ignoring the rules.
Right, exactly. Because they're also doing that in Tennessee, which is the other place that is very, very, very bad right now in terms of like per capita numbers. But those guys are just walking around doing, you know, indoor dining without masks.
Right, well,
so like that is understandable. We can barely go outside to do anything. You can't dine anywhere inside or even outside now at this point. You can't. Like indoor malls, I think, are like mostly closed. There are still people that are like shopping.
Well,
like,
I will say the one
week, probably shouldn't have
the
been,
one but lapse in this entire thing was that retail stayed open. So the messaging was like, don't leave your house or do anything that's not essential. But if you need to go to the Gap, go ahead. Like somehow like going to the Gap was essential, but getting food was not. Like, there were a lot of inconsistencies in the messaging, if you will.
There happened. Yes.
But it does seem like, well, and also I remember public health officials being really puzzled as to what was happening, because it's not like everyone didn't break the rules over Thanksgiving and why it exploded this way in LA and not everywhere else. It's like no one in America is, and this is actually something I've been thinking about a lot, which is, I think one of the things you have to do to make people follow the rules is give them the impression other people are following the rules. And almost all of our media is devoted to how many people aren't following the rules, which makes it feel like it's you're the only one following the rules if you're following the rules. And it,
no, you're right.
I don't think that's actually been helpful. I think it would be helpful if they came up with stats that were more like 75% of people are following the rules, and this 25% is causing all the trouble, and we need to stop the 25% from risking our lives recklessly because all of us are following the rules. Like, that would make you feel like you weren't alone in celebrating Christmas by yourself. Whereas at the moment, if you looked at social media right now, you would be like, am I the only person that didn't get together with my extended family? Because
and the news was all about, like, everybody was, you know, broadcasting from airports and things like that, talking about like how busy the travel
was. I was just thinking, like, I had to remind myself, I was like, don't go on social media on New Year's Eve, because you are going to feel like you are the only person who didn't go see your friends in the whole world.
I was talking to my boyfriend about this. We are both, because we were talking about what we were going to do on New Year's, and it's conceivable that on New Year's Eve, when everyone is getting together, they are people who could have become infected on Christmas and not yet know it on New Year's Eve, but still be giving it to everybody. So like the two of those things, like, close together are not
great.
Ideal.
But it's also like there should be some media devoted to the idea that everyone else is following the rules too, so that you don't feel like if you're following the rules, you're the, because what incentive do you have if everyone's recklessly risking your life anyway? What incentive do you have to also make yourself miserable sitting at home?
Right. You don't want to be the only sad person that you know who, like, didn't go out on New Year's Eve.
Right. And it's like, if most people are not going out on New Year's Eve, someone should be communicating that to us to make us feel like we didn't miss out on everything. Like, this is like a known psychological reaction that people have to FOMO. Is like famously a thing that we named for a reason. It's, you know, this is like the ultimate FOMO, because it's like everyone's been sitting in their homes for 10 months. So of course everyone's got FOMO now.
Yeah.
By the way, I keep changing the number of months. I think we've all, I don't know how long this has been going on. It feels like 7 years. So depending on my mood, sometimes it's 7 months, sometimes it's 10 months. Other times it's been 13 months. That's not even possible. Didn't even start till March. I have been making up an arbitrary number of months to suit my mood in that moment.
Yeah.
I'm in a 10 months mood today, but yesterday I was talking about 8 months.
Close.
So I don't know. I don't know what my plan is here. but in any case, other people are following the rules, even if no one's telling you that. So don't feel like you're the only one following the rules if you are.
Right.
That's the moral of my story.
I will be doing nothing on New Year's Eve, which interestingly is what I do every New Year's
Eve. I always go on a trip on New Year's Eve. So I'm sacrificing for America New Year's Eve, and I'm not happy about it, but I'm doing it.
I always always make some dinner and watch some Anderson Cooper and used to be Kathy Griffin. Those were the good old days. Now it's Andy Cohen, which is fine.
I don't know. It's like,
and so you watch that and you eat, and then, you know, you also get to watch it early, so you can go to bed early because you can celebrate it at 9 o'clock on the West Coast, and it just works out great. So
I'm a person who doesn't go to bed early no matter what the circumstance. So I love New Year's Eve because it's finally a night everyone has to stay up as late as me.
Yeah,
it's the best.
Yeah, it's true.
But feel like I want other people to be vocal about how they're also missing their usual plans so that I don't feel like I'm the only one who didn't get to do something fun. That's all I'm saying. And I'm just not going to look at social media that day. I don't want to know what fun things you guys did without me. I can't.
No, because you're going to judge those people anyway. So
I'm like post judging people at this point, because I feel like it's been so heavily mismanaged that I'm like not even judging people anymore. Like, I get the impulse to like go and break all the rules, because it's like there seems to be no point in doing anything because nothing ever gets any better. So like why follow the rules if it's not going to help, you know?
Well, and that I think is actually a specific thing that is happening in California.
Well, and I can.
Right. And I think that's why people are so mad at Newsom, because I think people who are not just like crazy conspiracy theorists are mad at Newsom right now, because and look, we can talk about the validity of that or not. But I think that there is a growing sense amongst people who are not just all nutty California Republicans that like we did the harshest lockdown. Yeah. We did the first lockdown. We have been the most conservative about this since this thing began, before any other, before we even had that many cases. We like did this preemptively, preventatively. And, you know, and now we're sort of like ground zero. And I think there is a lot of thinking of just like John Q. Public, like, well, we did this and like clearly it didn't work. So like, why would I continue to do this? And like, you can understand.
Well, I also think that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about what could have been more effective messaging. And I was talking specifically with my parents about what kind of World War II era messaging got everyone to feel like that was something we were all contributing to, because they had to ask people to make huge sacrifices during World War II here.
Totally.
They couldn't, you know, they had rationing of food. They were sending all of the men to war. So women had to, you know, change their lives completely as well. I mean, everything changed for people, and they did it. Part of the messaging was about A, that we were kind of all in it together, but also everyone had a role in the war effort. So it felt like everyone had a proactive thing that they could do. And I think they really failed to do that here in a way that I think would have helped everyone feel like it. I think part of the instinct to be in denial about what's going on is the feeling of helplessness, that if you admit what's going on and that you can do nothing about it, you feel like more depressed than you've ever felt in your life. So instead, everyone needs to have an active role. And even if that active role is sitting at home or whatever, you need to frame it as if they are making a sacrifice for everyone and that they are playing a part, that they are also the heroes. It's not just, you know, like we sort of have this tendency to get into this very like wartime mentality, but this is a modern wartime mentality about the heroes, you know, elsewhere,
the frontline workers.
While, of course, it was important to acknowledge them to make sure they were being protected, which they weren't being, it also, I think, would have been more productive to frame it as if everyone was playing a part in this effort, instead of framing it as if only doctors and grocery workers could play a part in the effort, and give everyone a feeling of investment in following the rules, and also investment in, and also community in following the rules. Because I think the other thing is, it's like a lot of people are like, our social fabric is fraying because my neighbors don't care about my health because they all went away. And it's like, what has community done for them? We haven't delivered a stimulus to them, so they're, you know, fucking poor and hungry. We haven't delivered any sort of stability or sense of community to them in the middle of this crisis. And every community that we have delivered that's been sort of an ad hoc local thing, which hasn't necessarily meant that they feel like their sacrifices have been worth it in the long run, because in the long run, this risk keeps circling back around. So like, look at LA, like in the long run, all those risks, you know, circled back around. And now LA is the epicenter of the coronavirus after months of living under much harsher rules than anywhere else in the country. And so, you know, people in LA are much less likely to have seen their friends or done anything fun or done anything that makes life worth living in the last 10 months, as I'm now framing
it. Yeah, totally.
And then to not even have that work, I mean, what a crushing thing to experience. So like, there should have been messaging that made us all feel like we were playing a part, so that we didn't have, that's how you combat the denialism that crops up every time something terrible like this happens, is you give people a chance.
Let everyone think they're being a hero.
Yes, you make everyone feel like a hero. You give everyone a role. You give everyone a chance to feel like they're doing something. I mean, early on, the reason everyone was coping so well was largely because people were self-appointing themselves to do that. And they were like getting toilet paper for their elderly neighbors or whatever they were up to. And that kind of dissipated because the feeling of, you know, community around this crisis dissipated because no one delivered any help. And then it was like, now it just feels like we're all waiting for some mysterious time when people who are never going to admit this is a real thing because they can't. They have no agency to do anything, so they'll never actually admit this was real. It's so horrifying if you have to come to the realization that it's real only now. I mean, we're asking people to do something that your brain is like literally designed to avoid doing, and then it's like we're mad that they didn't. Like, I don't know. It seems crazy.
Yeah, it does.
Seems crazy, you guys.
Yeah.
Someone come up with a public messaging campaign that's about all of us being a hero. I will write it for you if you pay me money to do that. I'm not going to do it for free because it's like, I've done enough free work in my life. And I just gave you the idea for free right now on the internet. So like, hire someone else if you want to also for free. But I'm happy to help for money. In any case, Trump has been peak Trump, though, for the last few weeks. And this week was, he peaked his previous peaks in ways that were both exciting and horrifying.
Right. His daily to-do list just says, the most.
Yes, exactly.
Like that, I mean, that's it. That's what we're dealing with.
It's just like drama.
Like,
to do.
Right.
Cause drama.
Fuck shit right. up. Yeah. I mean, he really is just sort of like, you know, he vetoed the defense
right.
spending bill.
He's about to cause a government shutdown.
That they might have the votes to override, but now they're worried that those like 120 like House Republicans who are sort of like sticking by him and are going to like challenge the election results like might like stand with him, and like then they wouldn't have a veto-proof majority for that. And they've been working on that for literally like months and months. That's a bipartisan bill, so like that's insane. And then also he just like totally like dropped a bomb into the middle of the stimulus,
God.
Which, by the way, he could have just been partaking of the you know, trying to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
Like, had he
no,
just
they stopped
told
him.
Steve Mnuchin
they
at some
stopped
point
him.
That...
Remember, this got reported. He wanted $2,000 before, and his staff stopped him. And I have one thing to say before we get further into this. We're talking, obviously, about his sudden plan.
About the stimulus.
His sudden interjection that he wants everyone to get a $2,000 stimulus. And it's largely because, A, he's just trying to fuck shit up, but also he heard that everyone was mad about the $600. And the one thing he wants the most is to be loved. And so he was just right. like, what do I need to do to be loved? I got to get these people more money. It's like the first good idea he's had ever. But also, he came up with $2,000 because one man came up with $2,000 before him and told his friends about it. And his friends have been harping on $2,000 for months. And that man is Bernie Sanders. And those friends
Bernie
are the
Sanders.
Squad and Ro Khanna and a bunch of other good people out there in Congress who are taking that $2,000 a month, you know, proposal that Bernie Sanders had made and just like repeating the figure over and over.
Elevating
and that
it. Yeah.
is how you win with Donald Trump. It is, he is inceptionable. He's only inceptionable. He doesn't have ideas that come
his
from
own
his own brain.
Right
he, you can only inception him. But we could have been playing to his vanity and his inception ability this entire time, because the reason he came in with that $2,000 plan is because he'd heard that figure somewhere before. So if we had said $1 million, that would have been the figure that he'd heard before.
That might have worked,
like,
too. Yeah.
Thank God Bernie Sanders was out there trying to outflank the rest of the Democrats, because that is how Donald Trump came up with the idea of $2,000 at all, was because he had heard someone say it. And obviously he wasn't paying attention to how he heard it, because he heard it from so many people he forgot. And then he suddenly came up with, $2,000 made sense to him. He didn't just spontaneously come up with $2,000, you guys. Bernie Sanders inceptioned him into thinking $2,000.
Yeah, and this is another reason why, you know, and we talked a little bit about this on the podcast last week, but why it would be so great in some of these negotiations for the Democrats to have a fucking spine.
Yes.
Because if both the Democrats and Donald Trump were pushing for this actively at the same time, and we knew that Donald Trump wanted $2,000 because he'd mentioned it once before already, then we probably would all be, would have had Christmas with a stimulus passed with $2,000 and some sort of extension of unemployment insurance.
Which expired this weekend.
We would not be, which expired this weekend, and we would all not be, you know, sitting here complaining about, like, the fact that they still haven't passed anything yet. Because the Democrats were just ready to cave to whatever number that the Republicans were ready to give.
Well, and you know who was urging them to do that?
$1,200 was already too little, and they were willing to cut that in fucking half, along with the amount of money for unemployment insurance. So the Democrats were ready to give away the entire gig here, basically.
Well, and
so,
it was, like, thank Joe Biden was out there encouraging them to do that. He was playing a role in these negotiations, and he encouraged them to feel comfortable cutting their ask. And that is not how you win with someone like Trump. That is how you win with a rational person who is actually trying to negotiate with you. But that's not what we have here with this Republican Party or with Donald Trump. What we have is people that need to be shamed and inceptioned. And inceptioning somebody is an entirely different skill set that requires you to have a backbone, because what we've known about Donald Trump since the very beginning is he repeats the last thing he heard. And you have to make sure that he has heard something from you too, so that he knows accidentally what to repeat. Like,
and the thing that he's hearing from you can't be, we'll take whatever.
Right. Yeah, it can't be, we'll take whatever.
You have to go in there and you have to tell him.
And I mean, this was like the most genius supervillain move ever, because it had been the far left that had been pushing $2,000 this whole time. And obviously they were being trampled by their own party. So no one was listening to them because their own party squashed that conversation. And then Donald Trump swooped in at the last moment to make it look like it was his idea to have $2,000 payments. And now it's going to look like if that does pass, it will look like the Republicans were the ones that brought it to us. And it is absolutely 100%. Not who brought us the $2,000 payments.
No, it's not, because they have specifically blocked it, because the Democrats brought it up either Christmas Eve or the day before, I can't remember, but specifically, but they didn't have a, they didn't have, it wasn't like an actual like floor vote.
Right.
So they tried brought to do it up by unanimous consent. For unanimous consent. And of course, like there were all one person had to do
it. I don't know why.
It did not take very long.
This is like such a no brainer because it's actually something you're delivering to every single constituent. Like, I know that your donors don't like it, but it's also like sometimes you have to tell them to get a life. And like,
right. And sometimes you also have to tell your donors that it's better to get a win than it is to,
it's better to be elected and like, serve them in all their tax cutting capacities that they serve them in than it is to not get elected because you guys are complete idiots. But also this left, I mean, the thing that Trump kind of screwed everyone in this process, which is amazing of him, because he screwed the Republicans too, because it left them in the position of having to say no to this. So it is Senate Republicans that are saying no to this $2,000 thing.
Yeah.
And so that is not the look you want going into a very contested Senate runoff election in a state that has very narrow majorities for Republicans traditionally, but just showed us that they don't have to vote that way if they don't feel like it. Like, this is not the look that, and this is not the look that you're going for. And also, this is like, I think, a terrible way to set yourself up for a change in administration, because I think you, if you don't have sort of support of the people when you're going into the minority, you ultimately don't have much. I mean, obviously the Democrats don't have thoughts or ideas, so that's going to also give them a disadvantage. So everyone is doing terribly in this scenario. But like, as Republicans, I feel like maybe you want your last punch to be the one where you're like, and nobody even likes you guys because we're the ones that, you know, like, you want your final punch to be obvious.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Trump is, I think Trump also, to a certain degree, knew that that's, he is very much fine with burning down the party.
Well, he's mad because Mitch, this is all a response to Mitch McConnell admitting that Biden won the election.
100%, because he went on a tweet storm yesterday.
Oh, about, it was an exciting one.
About how elected Republicans are not doing enough to block the election results.
This is what you get.
This is all because
when you get into bed.
This is all just
with a crazy person who doesn't have any loyalty to anyone. This is how it ends always.
Yeah, it's all because Mitch McConnell acknowledged that Joe Biden had won the presidency.
That's 100% of what's going on here, and it's only going to make McConnell's own caucus rowdier and crazier, and they're already as nuts as a group of people can possibly get. So I don't know what is going on. And then also, Trump is pardoning all of the great supervillains from the Trump years, currently in sitting in jail and or not sitting in jail anymore, just people that he felt he wanted to pardon for reasons that aren't even credible. I mean,
I was going to say,
Charles Kushner,
he pardoned one person who was sentenced to 30 days in jail.
Also, Charles Kushner got pardoned. And Charles Kushner, despite being Jared's dad, is out of jail. But also, his... That case was one that even Chris Christie was like, this, I am from New Jersey, and this was one of the grisliest things I've ever been a part of. Like, Chris Christie was appalled at Charles Kushner's behavior and specifically said, I'm from Jersey, and I was appalled. Because Chris Christie has seen some shit, you guys.
Yeah.
But in any case, pardoned Roger Stone. That's because Roger Stone has dirt on him. And also, this isn't going to stop Roger Stone from revealing that dirt, so I don't know why bother. It's Roger Stone is like Donald Trump. He doesn't, he's an island. He's not, he's out for himself. He doesn't care about. Paul Manafort is probably going to go back to committing treason momentarily. I can't imagine.
Sure, why not?
I mean, the only reason he joined the Trump administration was to deflect from how he had been committing treason. He was literally too duplicitous to consult for American companies at a certain point. So he went and started consulting for like supervillains abroad. And then he came back to work for Donald Trump. And it was his way of like protecting himself because he was going to be indicted. He he pardoned Duncan Hunter and Margaret Hunter, his wife, and Chris Collins as well. So all the great congressional criminals. George Papadopoulos. Finally, and George Papadopoulos was someone who was telling media that he was pretty sure he was going to get pardoned, and that was basically his whole plan. He right. pardons these Blackwater guards who literally were only indicted because they murdered a bunch of civilians. They committed extrajudicial killings in Iraq. And
Iraq. It was like a massacre, basically, yes. that they perpetrated.
And he just pardoned them, I think, to be an asshole. And he's doing this while they're murdering people on death row. So there's like this is all just insanity.
He also pardoned this guy, Alex van der Zwaan, who is this Dutch lawyer who was sentenced to 30 days in jail after he pled guilty to lying to Mueller. So basically all of the Mueller people who were convicted of anything
are a little tragic because I would say there is only one person from the Trump sphere that I think deserves a pardon and just doesn't deserve to have been the fall guy for as much as he was. And that's Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is like a run of the mill criminal in the way that like a lot of New Yorker criminals are criminals, which is to say, I think he probably deserves a few fines for his shenanigans with the taxi medallions. I don't think he's the one who deserves to be in jail of all the Trump people. I think he's the one who finally told us the truth about a lot of what was going on in the Trump administration. And so I think of the Trump genre of, sort of low lives, I feel like Michael Cohen is the one who has done the most service to the American people. And I don't think he deserves to be the one. I know he's not going to get pardoned. And I don't think he deserves to be the one who remains rotting in jail, even though he's on house arrest or whatever. But he's not the one who deserves to remain sentenced while the rest of these fools are just walking around, like while Roger Stone and Paul Manafort are out having coffee. That annoys me. I feel annoyed about what's happened to Michael Cohen. Who knew?
He also pardoned these two Border Patrol agents who were convicted in 2016 of shooting and wounding an unarmed, undocumented immigrant and then covering it up.
Well, that's exactly. I mean, this is right up his alley.
He's looking for very specific things.
Yeah, he's looking for things that will piss off.
Find somebody who got convicted of doing something bad to a brown person.
Right. Yeah.
And let's let them out of jail.
That's his whole plan.
Because there's no way this was a case that he was familiar with.
No, this random Border Patrol case? Certainly not.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and then
California
had a little news because we heard who is going to replace Kamala Harris in the Senate, and then we got to get mad about it because we are mad about it.
Yeah, and this was like who a lot of people sort of thought it was going to be. He's got a great relationship with Gavin Newsom. Yeah. Dianne Feinstein, he's worked for her, and so she had endorsed him. It's Alex Padilla, by the way, our Secretary of State. But, we talked even on this podcast, the noise about replacing our one black senator with another black woman was getting very loud. So we thought that maybe that was getting loud enough that we might get either Karen Bass or Barbara Lee, which would have been better options in our opinions, certainly than Alex Padilla was. But that didn't end up happening. We got Alex Padilla, which is what I guess we knew we were going to get. But we're just hoping that we wouldn't.
I think there's some frustrating elements to this that are, I think, not things that are on the surface frustrating, but are just frustrating about the dynamic, which is Feinstein did not like working with Kamala Harris. But Kamala Harris was much more politically in line with the people of California than Feinstein was. I think replacing...
And with Alex... And more so than Alex Padilla was.
And so I think replacing our one representative senator with somebody who is aligned with our non-representative senator is actually kind of a disservice to what the people of California tried to do by electing someone like Kamala Harris. People are very kind of... invested in, he's going to be California's first Latino senator. It is understandable why that might be a sort of first that Gavin Newsom was looking to address. But we are a state with many Latino and Latina residents. And because of that, many Latino and Latina politicians. And so Alex Padilla was not our only option for filling this role.
No, he was
not. I mean, Kevin DeLeon ran against Dianne Feinstein in the last... election and got the endorsement of the state party in that race. He's a Latino politician as well. We were not required to elect a moderate in order to find a Latino person to fill this role. As I think, the movement that was trying to encourage Gavin Newsom to replace Kamala Harris with a black woman pointed out, there are going to be zero black women in the Senate, a body that is already incredibly sort of poorly representative of the American people, to to leave out, you know, as we've said before, I get nuts about sort of conflating identity politics and political identity the way that moderate Democrats tend to do. So, like, it's great to have firsts, and it's important for bodies to be representative, but it's also important for them to be ideologically representative. And that's not something that these Democrats, these kind of Democrats, prioritize. No. So I'm keeping that in mind as just like a dream scenario where, you know, I don't expect regular Democrats to be able to follow me to the world where we are representative in a way that actually benefits these groups of people. However, we talk nonstop about, we're all walking around thanking Black women for delivering us left, right, and center from, you know, harm in all sorts of elections all over the country. And like, this is not an example. This is an example of Democrats turning their back on that very promise that they make every year to thank Black women and to, you know, to sort of recognize that Black women are the ones doing the work, than to turn around and sort of remove the one representation, the one person who's representing them in the Senate is exactly like Democrats to do, but also is why I hate that we walk around saying thank Black women and we don't do anything that would actually cause them to be wanting to vote for Democrats for real reasons. Like,
well, I agree. And also, you know, if we use Alex Padilla in a similar way where we're saying, like, you know, let's thank our Latino voters.
Right.
You know, because there are, it's like, I think 40% of our voters are something like that. It's very high, obviously. Then the thing that you would do is not nominate Alex Padilla, because let me tell you who California and Nevada and Texas and Latinos across the Southwest voted for in the presidential primary. It wasn't a fucking moderate. No. Right?
And so too.
It was Bernie Sanders. So if you want to, and he also just won the state by a landslide himself anyway, regardless of the Latino vote. So like, and also, as you said, you know, Kamala Harris being one of the more progressive senators in the entire Senate, she's one of the co-sponsors in the Medicare for All bill. We can sort of talk about whether we believe that now that we've had a presidential primary or not.
But at least she was
the idea. The idea.
There.
Right. The idea that just because. Right. The idea that just because the state has a lot of Latino voters, that you would put Alex Padilla in here, who is maybe not so actually representative of their politics, I think completely is a misread of what those voters wanted anyway, because they didn't want lame moderate.
No, and
energy.
Also there are progressive Latinos in it, like politicians that they could have, if their goal was to have a Latino senator, great. That is great. There are like millions of Latinos in California, including many who are in elected office right now who support Medicare for All, who have clear positions on criminal justice issues. We don't even really know where Padilla stands on a lot of issues that progressives care about. But we do know that when he was a member of the state Senate in 2012, he abstained from a lot of really important healthcare votes, including the vote that would have established single payer in the state, including a vote to expand Medicare. And so we know
he was one of the very few state representatives who either voted no or abstained, and that lost by two votes. All Republicans voted against it, and then like two Democrats voted no, and then four abstained from that vote, and Padilla was one of the four that abstained.
Exactly.
So like, we don't have a state-run single-payer plan in California specific. So it's not just that he isn't for it. He's like actively doing the things to do
to prevent it.
To prevent.
And that's what's fresh. You know, this is a frustrating thing for Newsom to have done, in part because Newsom ran on a Medicare for All platform.
He supposedly wanted Medicare.
His entire win was predicated on California desiring a single payer plan. And so to now replace our federal representation with somebody who is, you know, who has abstained from, it's like you look at his record and it's like every like ridiculous tiny vote that's like, give $2,000 to the Native American Healthcare Service or whatever. Like, he votes for that kind of stuff. And he abstains from every meaningful vote on healthcare in his entire time as state senator. That is not honoring the will of the people of California who elected somebody who became a co-sponsor of the Medicare for All bill. That's not honoring the will of the people of California who specifically, you know, showed Kamala Harris that they wanted her to move to the left. And because of that, she did. That's like, the will of the people who voted for that seat was something very different than what Alex Padilla is planning to deliver. I think one thing we can do as Californians is, from his very first day, we should all call his office every day and say, you are in a seat that was specifically designed, you know, that was a progressive seat. It was elected to be a progressive seat. You are in the seat of someone Californians wanted to be on the Medicare for All bill, and you have to become a co-sponsor. That we cannot have zero co-sponsors for that bill coming from California. But you are you are stealing the will of our, you're stealing our will if you don't do that. So I think that we should try to force him to at least co-sponsor that legislation. So. But I also, I think that we should demand that he clarify his positions, first of all, on a number of issues, because there's immigration issues is another area where we don't know anything about where he stands. You know, he was the Secretary of State in California, so we know he like wants to let people vote. But beyond that, we really don't know much about his positions. We know that he's maybe okay on the environment. He has an okay environmental record, but he hasn't sort of clarified where he stands on some of the hot button environmental issues that are currently in discussion right now at the federal level, like the Green New Deal. But he is somebody who should be asked to, you know, I know that I've said before, and I mean that having the most progressive voting record in the Senate means nothing because they don't vote on anything real in the Senate. But we should ask that he be somebody who is a good shepherd for those values anyway. You know, he should not be allowed to sink into Feinstein level moderate nonsense. And if he learned at the under the tutelage of Dianne Feinstein how to be a politician, I want nothing to do with this man.
I was going to say he needs to unlearn quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh boy. We also, interestingly, because he did not name a black woman to this seat, he immediately named who he was replacing Padilla with for Secretary of State, which was a black woman. Because he wouldn't have necessarily been required to name that immediately, but obviously that was part
of the rollout was building
of this, because he was trying to squelch any sort of blowback that he might be getting.
This is not like the same thing, though.
No. Well, and it's funny, too, because he put her in a, and maybe she has said that she is only going to finish out the term. It's Shirley Weber. She's an assemblywoman, but she is 72. And interestingly, Padilla was going to be term limited out in 2022. And there have already been a couple Democrats who have either announced or filed paperwork that they are going to run for Secretary of State. So he basically like made Padilla, you know, senator for life if he wants it. Although I think that
I hope that
seat is up in 2022 again, and there's going to be a primary.
I hope so.
I think so. We can decide whether we want him to continue to be our senator. But you know, it's hard once you're an incumbent. I mean, I think
there's always an advantage.
Reelecting Dianne Feinstein, even though we're doing it against our own.
Well, and interest. Even though she like literally has Alzheimer's at this point, like she is like a person that is like known to be suffering from dementia, like in the literal way. Not I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean that like literally she doesn't remember things that she's just been told type way.
Right. But he threw the 72-year-old black woman into like a position where in 2 years she's going to have a competitive primary from members of her own party. And, you know, like,
well, also,
but maybe also she'll be 74. So maybe she also said to him, look, I'll just finish this out. I don't know. And that's what I wish that he would have done with the Senate seat. We've talked about that on the podcast before. Like, why wouldn't he just name her to the Senate if she's capable? I mean, like, she's been in the state house for a long time and she's well-loved. Like, let her finish out 2 years in the Senate and then, like, let us have a fucking actual election.
No, he wanted to play kingmaker. I'm just, like, so frustrated. I mean, I've been harping on this nonstop on every podcast, but I'm so frustrated with moderate Democrats using identity politics to deflect from their lack of principles, but then doing things that fail to actually deliver for even the identities of the identity politicsies that they're, you know, that they're walking around thinking all over the place without actually doing anything. Like, I think this is like the Biden administration keeps rolling out posts and they just like go on and on about how proud they are of how diverse their picks are. And it's like, everyone should have diverse picks, especially as Democrats. That shouldn't, like, it's nice to do, but it's something that should be so expected that it's not even celebrated. But beyond that, we can't, I don't want any more people to post stupid shit on Instagram about how we need to thank black women for all of the work they do to ensure that we don't, you know, fall into a dust pile in the center of the earth. And then every single time that they ask us to deliver something that would benefit them, we're just like, oh, we can't. Like, that isn't actually how voting should work. That's we shouldn't have to thank black women for voting for Democrats and doing the work, because it should be something that they want to do. Just like we shouldn't have to thank anyone for voting for Democrats, because it should be that they feel that their lives are benefited by voting for Democrats. Like the idea right. that of having to single any particular group of people out to thank them for all their work indicates you're not planning to deliver for them. It indicates that you have no interest in them as a sort of political force. Like that is the most cynical way that you can conduct right. yourselves. And so like this is, but this yeah. is just like every single time that there's like an opportunity like this, they just fucking waste it. Where it's like, this is something where a movement started by black women that was being organized by black women was asking them to do the bare minimum, which is just like make it so that there are not zero black women in the Senate.
In the Senate.
And like,
right.
I like I said, like it's fine to have our first Latino senator from California also, like that's fine, but like to have done both the thing where the person that they have appointed is not going to best serve the interests of these black women who were asking this, and then also is not representative of them, is just like, fuck off, everyone. Like you're yep, all just doing agreed. It wrong. You would never have yep. to thank people for voting for you if you actually deliver for them. You can just go on getting their votes. It's like, it's so much easier. right. I don't, if you're like, right. like AOC's not having to walk around thanking certain demographics in her district for voting for her. She's just right. like, people are just like, we like having her.
Yeah, she's showing up for
exactly.
them.
Exactly. So like, I don't know.
Yeah.
With all this.
Yeah.
Oh, I keep getting worked up about it because it's just like such a cynical talking point. And nothing makes me angrier than a cynical talking point that gets repeated over and over and over again by people who are saying it in a really patronizing tone. Like,
yep.
You know, I think there's something about Democrats repeating it. It's like the genre of Democrats that keep repeating that is the exact genre of Democrats that makes me the most angry, because they're the ones like most dedicated to not doing anything ever.
Yeah,
I'm just
totally.
Like, I can't have you condescendingly explain to me who I need to be thanking left, right, and center about a rant, like when you guys aren't doing your job.
Yeah.
Like, in any case.
That's it.
It's my rant yeah. once again, my rant about how Democrats shouldn't be in a position where they have to constantly post memes about thanking black women. They could just thank them by legislating for them in appropriate ways. But here we are. In any case, we had a very exciting sort of incidents of mass violence. I don't know, terrorist attack is what I would call it, except for
that guess, I feel. Right? I mean,
this is what happened. I heard, we all woke up and heard that there'd been a bombing in Nashville, Tennessee at the AT&T building.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah. anyone who's been living in America was like, oh, some like rando white guy did this. And then we really knew that a rando white guy did it because nobody would tell us who did it. And then now we know for certain, and I'll tell you why. It's because they have a suspect and they've given us his name, but they haven't told us anything about him. But they keep getting quotes from his neighbors telling us what a nice guy he was. And
that's
code for random white guy. So if you're, and apparently it was potentially over his 5G paranoia. So he's a conspiracy
yeah,
theory white guy,
it was 5G
which
related.
Is exactly who does uh-huh. this kind of thing.
Of course.
And so if you had any doubts, don't have doubts about this. First of all, my mom at first thought Trump was going to try to blame Iran for this. And I was like, that's possible because he's obviously trying to start a war with Iran. I think Iran is just sort of like, we're going to wait him out. Like they could have gone to war with him years ago and decided not to because they were just like, yeah. this guy's crazy. Let's stay calm while he does his craziness and we'll just figure it out after right. that.
Yeah, totally.
But also, there's no way Iranians are caring about Nashville, Tennessee. There is only one group of people that cares deeply about Nashville, Tennessee. Well, two groups. One is people who live in Nashville, Tennessee and sure, care about your hometown. Two is country music fans. Which is another yeah. argument for why this was like just some kind of weird conspiracy theory white guy. Because those are the same people that yeah. listen to country music. In any case, if you ever...
You're not wrong.
If anyone... First of all, if a terrorist attack happens, and this is a terrorist attack because that's what terrorism is a truck bomb going off in front of a building in downtown Nashville and injuring people. If yeah. you hear about a terrorist attack and then you don't immediately hear about the suspect's criminal record or an entire ethnic group being under suspicion for it, then you can yep. guarantee that what you'll next hear is that he was a really nice guy that no one knew was troubled and that no one yep. is sure why this one individual guy who is absolutely not connected to any single other kind of person who would ever commit an act of violence could have ever done this. Because he was a perfect student
yep.
and beloved by everyone in his church and you know, probably had been walking elderly people across the street every Sunday for his entire life. And how someone like that could have found so much anger in his heart individually with no help.
If we find out this guy isn't white, then this will signify a turning point for the entire race.
Yeah, if they went and got a quote about how nice he was before finding out his race, then we really have turned a corner in America. And you heard it here first.
So, yeah, that's right.
I'm excited to hear. I'm excited to hear about what happens. Only three people were injured. No one died. So at least no one died. There was some, a lot of infrastructure got damaged. And also, listen, you can be pretty mad about 5G if you want. I don't really care. I think as a general rule, you should never bomb public places.
That's a good rule, I think. Probably.
Like, I think it's.
It's a real hard and fast rule.
For almost any situation, I think it's the right rule. I think it's just always a good idea to not bomb places. And I think if you are a person who is just like feeling like a conspiracy theory is really speaking to you, and you have an RV at your disposal and the ability to Google how to make bombs or whatever, I think a good rule of thumb is to give yourself some time to cool off. To wonder if maybe your conspiracy theory, given that other people don't share your level of alarm, might not be 100% accurate about what's going on. And then also just assume, if 5G is killing us anyway, I don't need to kill anyone quicker.
You're not helping.
Doing anything. Just keep yourself... It's just in general, I think, better to never... solo bomb anything. I don't even think group bombing is a good idea. I'll say it. You know, certainly I know that there have been causes that I theoretically agree with that have also used acts of violence to draw attention to them. I get that. I'm a person who's kind of fascinated by the Weather Underground accidentally blowing themselves up
Weather
in that
Underground. Totally.
Penthouse on 12th Street. Look, I get it. But as a general rule, even in situations like that, I'm on the side of not bombing.
That's not great.
I just think it's better. I think it's better. To not bomb. That's, you know.
Agreed.
And I think that's a good lesson for 2021 as we close out this year.
That's right.
I don't usually make New Year's resolutions, but I think if you're someone who's considering bombing stuff, I think a good one would be to not. Also, I think same if you have guns in your house. I think a good one would be to not have
don't shoot anyone,
and also don't have them.
Yeah.
I think those are two good ideas for 2021. And also,
I think so too.
You know, believe in vaccines. I think it's always best to err on the side of believing in a vaccine. Did you see that tweet from that guy who came back around to inventing vaccines? He was like, what if instead of vaccines, we just injected people with a tiny bit of the virus that had been deactivated or something like that? I think if you're a person who doesn't understand why every single other person is fine with something that seems really suspicious to you, a good rule of thumb is to find out if you maybe accidentally are not using common sense to see how the common sense version of addressing the problem is exactly what everyone is doing, and that's why everyone's fine with it.
Right. It would take common sense to think of that, though. So it's like, you know, it's a true catch.
No, it's a real awkward bind to find yourself in. And also, that's literally like what they used to do with smallpox during the Civil War. Like, that is like, not only is that inventing vaccines, but that's like the crudest version of vaccines where a ton of people died instead of the version where no one dies because it's been actually deactivated by science stuff. The nice thing about vaccines is I don't feel any desire to know anything about them. I feel it's okay. I take them. I don't like injections, but you know, I prefer not to get horrible diseases. So I think
that's the price you pay.
And that's, you know, that's 2020 for you guys.
God, I know. If you're looking for an appropriate way to wrap up 2020, I'm just going to make one quick suggestion. And I realize that Christmas has already passed, but I feel like the thing that really made me feel like 2020 was like officially over and we had been given the gift that we deserved was to watch The Grinch musical with Matthew Morrison. It's bad and deeply upsetting in ways that you can't possibly imagine. And it's the most overtly sexual Grinch performance that you've ever seen. It's deeply off-putting and awful, and I highly recommend watching it.
Yeah, I feel like you've been on a real movie palooza the last...
I have. I've been watching a lot of things. I watched Soul yesterday, which is great.
Pixar,
cried twice. That's,
I have heard every single person who's told me how great it is has also told me they've cried twice, which is how I'm going to end up not watching it.
Well, the thing is, it's that all Pixar movies are like that, but this specifically is like very much sort of like targeted at like middle-aged people who have like given up on like finding their purpose in life, God. Basically. So it's like a hard read, basically. Like, I mean, you're like, why did Pixar have to do me like that? You don't know my life, Pixar. So it was like really one of those.
Classic.
And then I also watched Wonder Woman on Christmas, which is truly terrible and unwatchable. Also in ways similar, not similar, but like similarly to The Grinch in ways that like bad, in ways that you won't expect it to be bad, like newfound badness. Sometimes. So I guess maybe if that's your thing, then watch it, I guess. But it's also really slow and boring, which is the problem.
Well, that's, with most movies, that's the number one thing you are trying to avoid.
Right, because I love watching bad movies. But I don't like watching bad 2.5 hour long movies that should have been at least one hour shorter than that.
That's, I like to watch a really bad movie in a theater, which you can't do right now. Remember when we went to see Cats? That was pretty fun.
Sure do. I know. Saw that multiple times in the movie theater, and that's the worst movie that's ever been made. Yeah. So
that's, or the time we saw Step Up Revolution in the theater by ourselves. I mean, totally, by ourselves. That was glorious.
That's the way to go.
That's,
by the way, there's bad cat CGI.
Oh, well, perfect. I guess no one ever learns lessons.
So,
I'm just going to keep, we're going to have bad cat CGI till the end of time in every movie that we try to watch.
Yeah.
And we'll be watching them on our home televisions because we never get to leave our house. Because you can't go outside and breathe the air. Yeah. In any case, don't go to a big party on New Year's.
Please.
And also, if you are a person who, you know, has the option to get the coronavirus vaccine, do that. Don't not do it. And those are the two things we're going to leave you with. We'll see you next year with what will then be a very imminent Georgia primary.
Oh, gosh.
So we're starting off the year with a bang.
Days away at that point. Yeah.
And also, Congress gets sworn in on January 3rd. And so January 4th would be the day to start calling everyone. Just with your thoughts and opinions.
Yes.
You got to get in there early. Get in there before they have enough staff that it's not their legislative director who has to pick up the phone. You know? Go go fast. And that is our advice to end 2020.
Yes.
So we'll talk to you next year. Bye.
Bye.